children.
It's all for you!
Dude, it is nice out here in LA. For once, we got fucking sun, man.
I know.
Yeah, like the weather is nice. I'm cooking in the office right now, but
I just closed my windows and door, and it'll be a matter of moments before I am miserable. So
yeah, definitely, I'm sweating.
I did have to turn off my fan, and I do live in a factory, so oven time, baby.
Yeah,
oven
time. You're about to turn into your brick oven will be activated.
Oh, it's shit. Okay. It'll be just get my opinions out much quicker because I'm roasting. Mm-hmm. Oof.
Let him cook.
I'm like, literally, somebody save me here. Yeah. Just intermittently hear the fan turn on. I'm like, no, that's nothing. That's outside. That's LA.
Yeah, that's a weird car.
Yeah, that's what the sirens sound like now over here.
All right. You guys ready to get started?
Let's go. I'm with it.
All right, let's do it. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hello.
Phil Acevedo.
Hey, what's going on?
And joining us this week, special guest and friend of the podcast, Andrew Parker. How the hell are you?
Heyo, I'm doing good.
Welcome back.
I'm excited for this episode. This is a big one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there is no list of fucked up horror movies that does not have this movie on it. You know?
Which is crazy cuz you know, it's like 90 minutes of just like psychological thriller and then 20 minutes of the most fucked up shit you've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is
I watched this with Danny and Ruben, also friends of the podcast, and the whole time they were just like, "What the fuck are you showing me?" And I was
Which is a great reaction, by the way.
And I was sitting there in the corner just like drinking my White Claw because this is what I wanted to do on my birthday. Subject people to this movie. And I was just like laughing my ass off. I was just like, "Just watch it. It just gets worse. It just keeps getting worse."
See, I was like, the reputation for this movie was, it's very, you know, it's known. So I was waiting for it to be a very consistent, horrifying experience. And it's like a 90-minute kind of like drama, which I was like, oh, okay, I know the shoe's going to drop at some point. And then when it drops, I'm like, I'm not going to look up right now. I'm playing Zelda. I am good. I am good.
Oh, man, yeah. Really?
I know the shoe definitely drops on this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. And of course, you know, it goes without saying, we've already discussed, or, you know, you clicked on the episode. You know what we're here for. We are talking about Audition from 1999.
Yes.
There isn't a year on the breakdown, but I knew that because I watched it so many times. I just know it is definitely... and kicking us off, giving us some breakdown. I think instead of Andrew, we're going to have Phil do this one.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. For IMDb synopsis.
Yeah.
Shall we? Let's get to it. Yeah, let's go with it. A widower takes an offer to screen girls at a special audition arranged for him by a friend to find him a new wife. The one he fancies is not the one who she appears to be after all. This is a tricky IMDb synopsis.
Yeah. Andrew, a new thing we're doing on the podcast is we're rating IMDb synopsises. What would you rate this IMDb synopsis?
You know, this is definitely the short one. Yeah, what am I rating it out of?
We've been out doing it out of 10.
10? Yeah, yeah. 10.
Out of 10?
Yeah.
I'll give it, you know, a 7, because it's not incorrect. It leaves a lot out. But, I mean, honestly... I feel like this movie would be so awesome to watch not knowing it was a horror movie and like going in blind on it. I almost tried to make my girlfriend watch this movie, but the thing is she gets really upset by amputations and such. So I was like, yeah, she's
yeah.
Yeah, she's mm-hmm. gonna be mad at me for this one.
It's like, that's one hell of a rug pull right there. That's no.
Yeah. Meanwhile, known fact about Anthony Fuentes on the podcast is he hates needles. And
oh yeah.
Oh man.
Thank God they put him on the cover of this fucking thing, so I know I'm getting into.
Yeah.
Not all of the, but there's multiple kinds of needles used in this. And as I'm watching it, I'm just like, oh, Anthony's going to be so mad at me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm like pacing in my room. But there's no deals in this IMDb synopsis, so I'm going with the 7 also. Bam.
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to give it a 6.
Yeah, I think 7's good.
I'm going to give it a 6. I think it's a little convoluted, but it's fine.
It's less AI-y than they have been recently, so there
that's
you go.
That's true. Yeah, this one wasn't. I don't think this one was written by ChatGPT.
Not yet. Not yet.
All right, shall we continue? Let's go with some credits here. Written by Ryu Murakami and Daisuke Tengen. I hope I pronounced that correctly. That's
good. And I actually, in preparation for this, I read the Ryu Murakami book.
Oh, that's awesome. Dude. That's fucking awesome, dude.
Oh, yeah, we'll do a little compare and contrast. It was good.
Yes, please.
It was really good. You know, there were some differences, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, it was really, really good. It was, I think it was about like 5 hours, the audiobook that I listened to.
That's short.
You know, it's not too long. It's short and sweet. Short and bittersweet. Salty and blood flavored.
Irony.
Yeah.
Irony.
All right. So Audition is, of course, directed by Takashi Miike. And it stars Ryu Ishibashi, Ishina. Ishina.
I think.
Tetsu Sawaki. And yeah, that's the cast and the credits right there. Let's look at some budget info here. This was a whopping 35 million yen, which translates to about $250,000. And it grossed $359,853 in the U.S. And couldn't pull up any Japanese box office info when I was looking for it, but they gave us U.S. box office info. So
and it still did better than Repo the Genetic Opera, thank God.
Oh, sad.
Webster, you keep bringing up that movie.
That movie deserved to do well.
Oh, man.
Okay. Phil.
All right. You know what?
It's been a conflicting time with that movie on this podcast.
So
I just want Alexa Vega to work more. I just want Alexa Vega to work more, and then that's fine. Give that woman more work.
So we covered Repo the first week. I love the movie. It had an obscene budget, and it made, like, no money whatsoever.
Oh, no. Yeah, I love Repo, too. It's a great movie, great cast, great music, great everything.
And then Phil spent, I don't know, was holding his tongue. And then at the very end, he was possessed by
yeah. Evil Phil.
Phil came out for sure. And I was just mm-hmm. like, oh, man, I think.
He's like, happy fucking birthday, Webster.
Anyway, listen to all of my birthday month picks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I was saying you brought up that movie again, and we're trying to have a good time here.
Let's get back to the needles. Let's get back to the needles.
Let's get back to those needles, shall we? Please, Winster, why don't you wire saw our feet with some plot breakdown, please?
Oh, my God. I'll deal gleefully
there's going to be a little bit of here. There's going to be a little bit of Audition puns here and there.
This is great. All right. Well, Audition tells the story of Shigeharu Aoyama, a recent widower who tries to settle with life without his wife. Good rhyme, motherfucker. In the first act of this Japanese thriller, Aoyama's son, Shigehiko, suggests searching for a new wife. Shigeharu warmly welcomes this idea, especially when his film producer friend, Yasuhisa? Man, I am not doing the Japanese names good today.
Good. You were doing pretty okay.
Yeah.
Devises a plan to hold mock casting auditions for young women to try out for a part to play in Shigeharu's Partner, or a phony film that will never get produced. He's a little scummy. He definitely comes off scummy.
Slimy.
It's slimy. Mm-hmm. I will say. Okay, actually, never mind. I'll save it for later.
Okay.
But this, the whole time I was just like, this is disgusting.
I feel like these bar scenes, like their dialogue in the bar, though. I'm like, oh, I've definitely heard that around. People. Just... Am I too old to get a fucking wife?
We're for sure gonna get all into this later. Let's power through the breakdown for a bit.
All right. Being hesitant at first, Shigeharu agrees to this piece of shit's plan to hold fake casting auditions, while keeping a hidden agenda in searching for a new potential wife, long-term partner. So, after a brief montage of casting auditions with many young ladies, Shigeharu gets blown away once he lays his eyes on Asami Yamazaki. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's every song. Yeah, where it's just zooms in on the eyes, zooms in on the girl.
I love it at first sight.
But not often after so many very inappropriate questions and occasional titties, like right before.
Okay, it's definitely a different barrier to entry there. Because as I'm watching this with friends, because also, like, here's the thing. It's, like, it's easy to, like, make your jokes while you're watching this with, like, friends, also when you're a little drunk. But, like, the amount of casting couch jokes that were made during this scene between my friends and I were plentiful.
I think I had a couple in my head as I was watching, because it goes to a long fucking scene. It's a very long scene.
Yeah. I know, Phil, a brief montage of casting auditions, it's a long scene of casting auditions.
You know, Webster, I may have found out and discovered and learned what a throat goat is through this podcast, but I already knew what a casting couch was. So I'm so proud of you.
I'm so proud of you.
That's two totally different types of auditions, Phil. Anyways, so it wasn't just it wasn't just her overall cuteness that caught his eye. It was also her seeming emotional depth, which, yeah, okay, I mean.
After a hip injury made her unable to perform ballet, this hot Asian girl will take away your breath.
And your foot.
Just one of the feet, though. And your son. Fucking poor.
Anyways. And dog.
And that was... Oh, no. Let's just keep going. That one hurt. Yeah, that one hurt. So, Shigeharu becomes interested in Asami and asks his homie for the info on her so he can call her and take her out on a good old-fashioned date.
This is also so scummy.
Which is not ethical at all. Not ethical at all. Gonna say it. Not good.
Somehow more reprehensible than the, like, let me show me your tits, like, 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, at least she consented to doing that. This is exactly. This is equivalent to like workplace harassment. She's showing up for a job interview, and basically like her potential boss is just like, "Hey, do you want to go out on a date?" Like I would freak out.
But I mean, you also wouldn't saw somebody's foot off. So there's a different boundary there, I guess.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah.
That we know of. So. pulling up information and references on Asami's resume, Yasuhisa was unsuccessful. It's really weird. Yeah, he looked up this music producer that Asami claims she worked for, but that dude has apparently been reported missing.
Suspicious.
When you got rose tinted glasses, all the red flags just click flags. They just look like regular ass flags. Okay, buddy.
Yep.
So Yasuhisa,
the BoJack quote. Wow.
Oh yeah. No, this is totally that quote. The movie, and then the red just ends up being a bloody footstep. So
yeah.
Yasuhisa, like a good bro, warned Shigeharu that Asami might be sketchier than he is, and that he shouldn't pursue her. And I mean, that's a pretty big barrier to cross right there. He's a pretty sketchy dude, but not a violent dude.
Yeah, game recognized game, you know?
Yeah. He's just like, listen, I've done some shit in my life, but, you know, this is some bad track covering right here.
That bitch scares me.
Yeah. But of course, Aoyama is enthralled by Asami and ignores Yasuhisa's warning and pursues her anyway. I'm sprung.
Oh, yeah. Good catch. Oh, that's a good song to yep.
Oh, I know, right? Imagine our soundtrack replacement of this whole movie would be fucking horrifying. Yeah. Let's keep doing that. That's good. All right, so Webster, let's cut deeper into this plot breakdown, huh?
Huh? Kitty, 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 kitty.
Right behind you. I can hear it right there.
Kitty, kitty, kitty.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus.
I looked that up. Apparently the actress, that was her idea to do that during the scene.
Yeah,
and Mike loved it. Yeah.
Well, thank goodness she did, because that is like deeply disturbing.
It really is.
So, this is a, as Anthony said, a classic case of ignoring red flags.
Oh, I didn't even scroll down. Hell yeah.
Wow.
I went blind as hell. All right, let's do it.
So a few days go by and we continue the story as this time we are in Asami's apartment. There is nothing in this apartment but a big sack containing who knows what and a telephone. It is absolutely silent in this empty-ass apartment, and all we see is Asami sitting perfectly still, patiently and very eerily on the floor, waiting for that phone to ring. Honestly, maybe scarier for me than the fucking end of the movie. I don't know what this is about, what it is about this, but it fucking is upsetting.
Yeah, it was like shot in a way that...
It's a very eerie-looking environment, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when the phone finally rings, Asami answers it, pretending she wasn't expecting Aoyama to call, and agrees to meet up with him. After several dates, Asami agrees to go to a seaside hotel with him. They're just going on a little weekend getaway.
He's not a good clothes room, man. He should have. That's just. That's too many dates.
I mean, they say several, but it was like two.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Wait, in the scene, like, though, what, a week? Not even a week?
That burlap sack, though, like, does a little twitch, too, in this scene as well, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And that fucked me up, because I'm like, oh, okay, she had been nice until now. Oh, this is not good. This is not good.
What's in the bag?
Yeah.
So, at the hotel, Shigeharu has intentions to propose to Asami. When removing her clothes, Asami reveals to Shigeharu that she has burn scars on her body. Right before Asami and Shigeharu get down and dirty, Asami demands that he pledges his love for her and no one else. This scene, it was like, when we were watching it, everyone was just like, this is weird, this is weird,
Yeah, it's definitely, definitely something you want to hear right before you pipe down. Be like, promise you'll only love me.
And only me. Yep. The first time you fuck, the first time you fuck someone, you just want to hear that, like, just promise you'll love me and only me. It works for me every
out.
Time.
It's already out. This is a really hard way to turn around from this one. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Just you and only you. Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Man. Absolutely. But yeah.
It's like, but do you have a condom by any chance? Right. He seems like the kind of guy who would not bring one to the scene.
No. Yeah. He's like, he's been single for like 8 years. Seven years. So. No, the cut said 7 years later, I think.
He's had the same condom in his wallet for the past like seven or so.
Not even a condom anymore. It's just like sludge and a little fucking wrapper.
He's like, wow, this is mushier than I remember. It's fine. It'll work.
So, emotions are high. And of course, Shigeharu agrees to Asami's demand.
Oh, yeah. That's an autocorrect. Every time I kept on writing her name, freaking Google Docs would correct it to Asahi, like the beer.
That is so. I'm drinking Asahi right now.
Oh, that's so funny.
You read the book, got a pack of Asahi. He's fully prepared for this shit.
Dude, you get prepared, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's actually my buddy brought some over the other night for a party, and he just left them here. So I'm like, hell yeah. I love a good Japanese beer from time to time.
It's good.
It's good. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Asahi, Sapporo.
Sapporo's good.
Anyways.
Anyway.
We're all getting hungry now. Like, hungry? Yeah, beer? Yeah. Food right now.
So, emotions are high. Everyone agrees. I'll love you forever, et cetera, et cetera. Can we fuck now? Mm-hmm. They do the hippity-dippity. And the next morning, Asami is nowhere to be found.
Ooh. Been there, bro.
Happens to the best of us. I mean,
sometimes, and he's just like, hell yeah. Hell yeah, she's gone.
Like, that saves me a lot of time. No,
he actually has the very opposite to that, actually.
Yeah, Shikaru is simping hard for Asami, so he goes to town searching for her. He tries to track her down using her resume, but just like Yasuhisa warned, all the contacts and references are duds or just plain like made up. Which is just a good indicator. Lie on your fucking resumes, people.
Well, it's like, you know what? I would say that's a red flag, but at the same time, if you're not lying on your resume, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Always lie on your resume.
I saw this thing
that's
online.
That's how I got my job.
He's like, can she even type 70 words a minute? Is that even true? Is that even true?
No. I saw online that someone was just like, just say you signed an NDA. That's why you have a gap year.
Exactly. There you go.
You signed an NDA. You cannot discuss why you didn't work for a period of time. I'm so sorry.
That's hilarious.
So again, lie on your resumes, people. And it also prevents creepers who are, you know, being weird.
Yeah, trying to track you down.
Trying to track you down. It's a safety measure. So Shikaharu went to the dance studio where Asami said that she trained at. There, he finds a man in a wheelchair and is bound by prosthetic feet.
And let me tell you, sorry to cut you off there, those prosthetic feet, probably the most ghastly prosthetic feet I've ever seen. The fucking, like, fake foot glued to pieces of wood. It's not quite that Japanese sandal, but it's just like, yeah, just flat pieces of wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are ghastly, aren't they?
Gas is a very good descriptor, I would say, for sure.
Yeah. It is revealed via a very terrifying, odd flashback that this man was very torturous and abusive in Asami's childhood. And holy God, it's rough. Later, Shikaharu went to the bar where Asami worked, and he found out that the bar had been abandoned for over a year following the murder and dismemberment of the owner. Additionally, a helpful passerby tells Shikaharu that the police found 3 extra fingers, an extra ear, and an extra tongue when the body was recovered.
Oof.
Yeah, which is opposite of what usually happens, you know? Yeah. Like usually they're missing stuff. They're like, all right, we got the body and there's extra hand here. There's 2 tongues. Oh, boy.
I know.
You know, yeah, they're like like putting it back together. Yeah, because they said that the guy was dismembered. And they're just like, wait a minute. You know, they're laying it out on the morgue table. Like, hold on. We got 2 left ears here.
We got 2 tongues. We've never seen this before.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this guy have an extra ear? Check those medical records. Nope, regular dude. Ah, yeah. Shit. That's more paperwork. Well, that is more paperwork.
He's not, not mutated.
Was there any radiation thing going on right here? No radiation. Oh, yep. Shit.
God
okay.
damn it. So.
He definitely wasn't from like Fujiyama or whatever.
Yeah,
where
Fukushima.
Is the place
Fukushima.
Where the Fukushima? Yeah, that's it.
There you go. Oh, that'd be good. Get the bartender in Fukushima. It's like, hey, it's getting a little slower. What's going on over there?
Oh man. Also, didn't Fukushima happen in like 2011?
Oh yeah, that's true. But hey, man. I mean, there are some like some mutations that would be good for a bartender. Like if you grew an extra arm or something.
If it was a usable arm, it would.
Yeah, you shake a couple extra shakers at once.
Oh my gosh.
That's the shot arm right there.
Okay, so this came back later in when what's his face was tripping balls, but like when him and his buddy are talking in the bar and that bartender's hitting that shaker like his life depended on it.
Oh yeah.
I was just like, why is this bartender so all up in their business? He is eavesdropping like a motherfucker, but he's just like, oh, don't mind me. I'm just shaking some ice. Like it's just ice. There's nothing in there.
He would do fantastically in downtown Los Angeles, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I was just going to say, his passion for mixology would serve really well in downtown LA.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we need that kind of energy. So, as the passerby tells this story, Shigeharu has these sick-ass hallucinations of some extra body parts. But let's continue this breakdown with you, Phil. Why don't you take some extra needles and pinpoint us to the climax of this story?
All right.
Are you fucking proud of yourself?
I am. No, I think I am. For the first time ever in the history of this podcast, this is a very, very Phil-written script, and I love it.
That's
love
so it. Funny. I didn't mean the what's in the sack thing. That's just, okay, I didn't know that either.
See, I know, right?
See, you said that earlier, and I was like, oh, you must have read that. Both of you guys, I was like under the impression that you guys have read the script prior to recording, I'm very proud of you
Phil,
guys.
I think we've been doing this for so long, our minds are coalescing at some point. We're just all coalescing.
Yeah, I love this point in the movie, too, because it's like, the first, like, two-thirds of it could honestly be, like, a rom-com. I mean, it's kind of sleazy the way it's working, but it's like, you know, you got movies like Hitch and stuff where, yeah, like, the premise is sleazy, you know? But, like, at this point, we take a hard left turn into horror.
Yeah.
Which, I really wish I could, like, go in and watch this movie completely blind, not knowing that this was going to happen. Because, it's like, it's a great twist on it.
Yeah, and then
that's
also
one of the beautiful things about it.
When you bring that up, somebody should recut Hitch to make that last act a horror movie for sure.
Well, actually,
that would be fucking awesome.
It's funny. I looked up. I was reading trivia and stuff about this, and Miike did that intentionally. He intentionally did the thing to right turn into horror at the very end of the movie. And, you know, because he wanted the audiences to be surprised by the horror, but it's actually funny because it worked opposite because of how infamous this movie is. Horror fans will tune into it and be like, what the fuck am I watching? You know, because the first hour of it is like a rom-com almost, you know?
Yeah, I definitely had that, when are we getting to the fireworks factory moment for a while? And then we went, and then I was like, I'm done. Nope, no ride. I'm done.
Get me out of the fireworks factory.
Yeah.
Get me out of the fireworks factory. Oh, all right, Phil, what is it?
Great analogy, by the way. But as Alex spoiled the title earlier, let's go with what's in the sack. And we're about to find out what's in that big sack that's sitting right next to the telephone. While Shigeharu is making efforts in tracking down Asami, Asami is already at Shigeharu's house. And that is where she finds a photo of his late wife. This ultimately pisses her off, so she does what any psychopath who creepily sits by the phone next to a large sack would do. She drugs Shigeharu's alcohol. Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah,
they are known for that. Yes,
yeah. Danny pointed this out when we were watching it, but like, this man drinks a lot. This man, like, I'm assuming whiskey. He loves that shit. In this movie, he is like constantly nursing like a glass of whiskey.
He's a hoosh hound. Yes.
Oh yeah. But of course, later Aoyama comes home, he pours himself a drink, and he starts feeling the effects of whatever Asami put in his liquor. So it's right there when we get a flashback sequence where we are back in Asahi's empty apartment. The large sack in Asami's apartment starts to fucking move. Which, that part kind of startles me to this day. The sack contains a man who's missing both of his feet, his tongue, and three fingers in one hand. And, of course, this dismembered man crawls out of the sack and begs Asami for food. Asami then vomits into a dog dish and places it on the floor for the man. The dude then sticks his face on the vomit and just hungrily consumes it. Hell yeah, dude. Puke food.
Andrew, are you ready to shock
people? Oh, yeah. Yes, and this is my fun fact about this movie. That was actually the actress vomiting, and that was actually the actress's vomit. She was a method actor, so she insisted that she actually puke in the bowl and that the guy eat her vomit.
What the fuck?
Oh no.
And she pukes a lot. Oh yeah. No, yeah, that's a fun fact about this movie.
Isn't that a fun fact, guys? Aren't you having fun?
That's among the worst The More You Knows I've ever heard in my life.
Yes, it's gross,
but damn, that is that's quite fucking fascinating at the same time.
The only way I was able to stomach watching this was in my head, thinking like, oh, that's like soup. I literally said that in my head. I'm like, oh, yeah, don't freak out, buddy. That's just like some prop food. You were A-okay.
Nope.
And nope. No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she puked a lot, too. Like that dog bowl was full. It was full, and it was like leaking when she brings it over to him.
It's disgusting. She
spills a bunch. Yep. Real vomit. She actually made herself throw up for that.
And where did you find that?
You know, I've seen it on Reddit before, and it's in the IMDb trivia stuff.
Holy shit, that's nuts! I didn't come across it when I was doing research for this movie, but that's insane.
Yeah.
Holy shit! All
right, no dinner today. No dinner today.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking the same thing too, man. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Dinner tomorrow either. Fuck that. No.
I was like, we're drinking tonight, guys. You need to eat.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But anyways, let's continue. We are back in Shigehara's apartment where he collapses from the drug placed in his alcohol. Asami shows up and injects Shigehara with a substance that completely paralyzes him, but still leaves his nerves alert. So his nerves are still intact, everything's still going there, except he just can't fucking move. So, as Asami is torturing Shigehara by sticking needles on his body and face, she tells him that that just like everyone else in her life, he has failed to love only her. And she can't tolerate his feelings for anyone else, and that's even including his own son. She inserts needles into the skin below his eyes using a cute tone, saying deeper continuously as she does so, which goes, kitty, 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 kitty. Yeah. All in unison. There you go. Yeah. Love it.
I refuse. It's haunting. No.
Yeah.
Did you just not watch the last 20 minutes of this movie, Anthony?
No, I watched it, but it was more, definitely one of those like my hands are covering my face type of scenario.
Understood.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, it's like most of it is odd. Like most of the horror of this scene comes from the sound.
Yes.
Because holy, did they do a good job on Foley.
Yeah. The sound.
I feel like Anthony was kind of like how I was with Underwater, with like the POV shots of like just empty dark water. I'm just covering kind of like half of my eyes. Yeah, that shit's.
I'm with you, man. So. I can't look at that type of stuff. There's like
dude, when it's just just black open ocean like that, and
That horrifies me.
Oh, yeah, same here. So, one of the major highlights of this torture sequence is where Asami cuts off Shigeharu's left foot using a wire saw. And it's during this torture sequence, Shigehiko, Shigeharu's son, returns home as Asami starts going to work on the other foot. Asami then attacks the boy with a can of mace, but then suddenly, Shigeharu wakes up back in the hotel room after he and Asami had already had sex. So what the hell's going on here? So what? Waking up from first time watching this movie, I was like, oh, hell no, dude. Don't tell me. But waking up from what seems like a nightmare, Shigeharu checks on his feet and confirms that they're both still there and in place. But it turns out that he had proposed to Asami and she had accepted. It was all a fucking dream. Or so he thought. So he goes back to sleep. But this time, waking up back to the torture scene. The part of him waking up in bed with Asami turned out to be the fucking dream.
Whoa!
I thought I was out!
Oh, it's so good. Shigeharu comes back to reality, back to being paralyzed while having his feet cut off and needles on his fucking face. Shigeharu's son is fighting off Asami at the top of the staircase. When he then just, drop kicks her, sends her fucking flying off down to the first floor, Asami falls and breaks her neck. Break your fucking neck, boy.
I know. Break your Busta neck. Rhymes comes in.
So break your neck.
The worst time to take a nap when your son is fighting for his life.
Yes, right.
To be fair, Phil, when he said back to reality, I almost said, well, there goes gravity. I almost did it. I almost did it.
Me too.
Yeah, I was like, don't do it, Anthony. Don't do it.
I did too.
We cannot do another lose yourself break. It's happens too much on this podcast.
Every time there's a back to reality thing, like one of us is going, just whoop, there goes gravity.
Or spaghetti.
I mean, those two do follow well, too, because he snaps back to reality and then gravity gets Asami. Yep.
There you go.
There goes gravity.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
There was vomit earlier, but not on the sweater. Yep. It was on
And it was not spaghetti. At least
it was not. It was not.
Definitely didn't look like
it. Yeah, that looked like some chicken noodle or like chicken broth.
All right, let's continue here. So, Shigeharu tells his son to call the cops and continues to lay on the floor paralyzed. And it's from his POV he's able to see the dying Asami as she repeats what she said on one of their dates about her excitement on seeing him again. And that's pretty much where we kind of fade to black and the movie ends kind of just right there. But that is it for the plot breakdown. We did it, y'all. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, why don't you share with us some fun production facts about Audition, please?
Okay, I will do that. But this is the part where I'm going to compare and contrast the book.
Please do.
From the movie.
I was about to suggest that as well.
Yeah, okay, if one thing that I knew you read the book, I would have put that in the script. That's so cool.
Oh, yeah. No, you're good. This is a great point to bring it up. All right, so a couple big differences. So in the book, it's Shigeharu who kicks What's-Her-Name down the stairs. And the son comes in and, like, beats her to death because her arm's all broken and fucked up. Her neck's not broken in the book. The guy in the bag, not there at all in the book.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, the part about, like, how they found the person dismembered and they found the extra parts, that was in the book. But yeah, the man in the bag wasn't. I get it, though, because it's like, You gotta add that almost like it's almost like psychedelic like horror when he's like you don't really know if it's a hallucination or what and it's just some fucking crazy weird thing.
Yeah, the film medium needs some visual flair.
Yeah, one of the biggest, most shocking things that was in the book that wasn't in the movie though was the death of the pet dog. Throughout this movie, they have a little dog, and his name's, I think in the movie his name's Gang, but in the book it was Gangsta. Yeah. Well, in the book, the beagle's name is Gangsta, and he's, that's like, awesome. A lot more present in the book, but at the end, when she's got Shigeharu drugged and shit, before she goes to town on him, she's got the dog drugged at the same thing, and she cuts his fucking legs and head off in front of Shigeharu, and it is so graphic and fucked up that Miike, like, did not want to put it in the movie, which is crazy, considering how famous this movie is for being so fucking upsetting, you know?
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, because in the movie, all you see is that the dog is dead for, like, just a little bit, but... You know, trigger warning for people because that is like up fucking setting.
So,
and I remember listening to the book, like being like, "Oh my god, it was pretty bad."
Yeah. So quick thing for that, I've recently been telling people about this left and right, but there is a website called DoesTheDogDie.com. It's great for stuff like this. But as we were watching, my friends were like, does that dog fucking die? Like, from the very beginning, they called it. Like, they're like, does that dog fucking die? And I was just like, you know what? And because it's been, like, years and years and years since I've seen this movie. I was like, I don't remember. And I very, very quickly was like, does the dog die? Audition.
Yes, the dog dies. The dog dies a way worse death in the book.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's brutal. It is like, it's a lot. And it's funny, because Miike did not want to put it in the movie. They were like, this is too much. Which is saying a lot because they had a guy eat real vomit. You know?
Yeah. Listen, I have a line. It might not be a consistent line, but it is a line.
Yeah, right.
This is racism I can excuse, but I draw the line at animal abuse. You draw yeah. racism you can excuse.
All right, so production facts about Audition, now that I've done my little aside here. Because honestly, the movie followed the book quite a bit. They just changed a little nice. Bit of stuff at the end. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so not many auditions for Audition. Omega Project is the production company behind Audition and was behind the production of The Ring. Since The Ring was seeing big success in Japan and pretty much the rest of Asia, Omega Project wanted to follow up with their next project to be different from the supernatural-themed predecessor, so they chose to adapt Ryu Murakami's 1997 novel, Audition. And actually, I saw an interesting thing about this, too. Takashi Miike does not consider this movie a horror movie. Because apparently, in Japan, when they think horror, they think the supernatural. Which makes sense, because most of your Japanese horror is ghosts mm-hmm. and hauntings mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So yeah, he doesn't consider this movie a horror. I would assume he considers it something like a drama or something, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's that.
That's fascinating. I mean, I think most of the movie, it definitely... I mean, maybe it'd be the equivalent where, like, we kind of draw the line between, like, a horror and, like, a thriller.
Uh-huh.
But...
Yeah.
Where it's, like, not necessarily... I don't know. That's interesting. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Romantic comedy, I think, is the angle that they actually...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Officially is genre categorized right there. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Omega Project hired a team that was not known for working on horror films, including director Takashi Miike. And I think up to that point, he hadn't done a ton of horror. It had been mostly like crime thrillers and stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't think he hadn't done Ichi the Killer yet. I don't think
he had that. I think at this time he had zero horror experience.
Yeah, because Ichi the Killer came out in 2001, I believe.
I believe so. This is like his follow-up. Yeah, that was his follow-up.
Nice. Casting for Audition was straightforward and ironically didn't hold auditions. Actor Ryu Ishibashi had been wanting to work with Miike for some time, so when he asked if he could play the male lead, he agreed. Even though he had never worked on a horror film before either. Model and actress Eihi Ishiina was brought on right after Miike had met up with her for coffee, and she just has that effect on people, apparently.
Just so charming.
Yeah,
you know, it's like she fed him a cup of hot vomit, and he couldn't say no.
He's like, what kind of soup is this? Like, don't worry about what kind of soup it is, actually. It's fine.
Okay, I was trying to remember where we had seen Ishibashi before. He was in Suicide Club.
Was he? Yeah. Oh, shit. Oh, okay.
I mean,
he's got a familiar face. I meant to look that up, too.
He came out, that came out in 2001, so it was like, it was obviously a little bit later. But yeah, so for his like first horror role that would go to Audition, but yeah, he was in Suicide Club. I knew he looked familiar.
Do you have his IMDb pulled up right now?
I do.
Webster? Can you check to see if he was in Kill Bill Volume 1?
Sure.
I thought so too.
I think
he's like Bossanaka, huh?
Yes, I think he's one of the bosses.
He's not Bossanaka. I'm looking at it right now. He's...
Is it? I don't know.
He does. Mm-hmm. He does. That's actually, I think that's what I... No, that is played by Jun Kunimura.
He was also in the...
But they do have like a similar face. Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, nope.
Yeah, they've got that like wrinkly forehead and like serious face, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I seriously thought he was one of the bosses from Kill Bill. Yeah.
Nope.
All right.
And so Audition was shot in approximately 3 weeks using real apartments, real restaurants, and real locations for the Tokyo exterior scenes. And actually, I looked up this. Apparently, 3 weeks was 1 week longer than Miike's like normal production schedule, which is fucking crazy, but makes total sense because he has directed a million movies.
Yeah, I looked at his list right now. It's his a long list, a long fucking list of productions. Time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And his, apparently, this is like abnormal for him to shoot something at 3 weeks because he usually shoots like his productions run for like no more than 2 weeks. So this is like something different for him. He's like, oh shit, first of all, 3 weeks is insane.
Well, when you've been doing something for as long as that he really has, you kind of get into the flow of it. You're just like, all right, I know there's a rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, model and actress Eihi Shiina had come up with the idea to whisper, kitty, 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 during the torture scenes. She pitched this idea to Miike, and he was down to use it since he stated that those lines and that delivery made the scene scarier.
Hell fucking yeah, it does. Yeah.
It really does. It's fucking creepy as fuck, because it's like cute.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She's being cutesy about driving these really long needles into his body, which is absolutely fucking stomach turning.
Oh, man. Yep. I didn't realize it was like, for the needles in the eyes thing, I thought it was like in his eyes, not the area under his eyes, and somehow that's worse.
Yeah, right.
Somehow that's worse.
No, I think Kitty 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 is like a perfect combination of cute and terrifying, for real.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what made it so like iconic. This,
and now we gotta say it before we do shots every time.
Tonight?
Let's do it. Somebody remind us, please. Let's not forget. Because I'm super down.
Everyone's going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Except for me.
Yeah. Except for us three. We'll know.
We know. All right, let's talk about the reception of Audition, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, cool.
Yes.
So, Audition currently sits on the tomato meter with an 83% with an 80% audience score. So, pretty high.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good.
Could be better, but whatever. on Letterboxd, Audition has a 3.8 out of 5 stars from only 1,000 fans.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised myself.
That's it?
Yeah.
No. That's weird.
No way.
Something wrong with that. Something wrong with fucking their medulla oblongata.
I'm looking at it right. I'm on Letterboxd right now. I'm looking at it. It's 1.2K.
Of fans out of 113,000 ratings.
Oh. Oh, shit. Oh, my bad.
I was like, there's no way that's right.
I honestly don't know how to use Letterboxd.
That makes sense.
There's no way that's right. sorry. So, Cassie with 5 stars says, his friend at the office is going to have the biggest I told you so ever. Grooveman with 5 stars says,
that's a good one.
Says, quote, I'm glad I'm married because I'm never dating again.
Oh my God.
That is.
Update this movie with modern dating habits, and that's going to be fun.
That's what Shigeharu thought.
Right?
Just saying, you know?
Oh, fuck.
That's what they all think. Okay, Alex Todd with 3.5 stars says, quote, this is what I assume happens when you meet people off Tinder.
Yeah.
That's more of a coffee mitz bagel kind of thing, actually. That's why people use it that much.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I've met some sketchy ass people on Tinder.
No. This is Field for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
All the people who are just like in committed relationships are just like, what the fuck are they talking about?
The scene is ever evolving, trust me.
Willow McClay with 5 stars says, I wish she had cut off both his feet. # misandry.
Oh Lord.
And finally, Patrick Willems with 4.5 stars, or 421 stars.
Very specific rating, Phil. Very specific rating.
That's a typo.
Says, quote, I love watching people watch Audition almost as much as I love Audition. That is exactly my thoughts on this movie.
Yep.
So good. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm really disappointed that I wasn't able to show my girlfriend this movie before I told her what happens in it. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, that's one I can't really do that to her.
Yeah.
This is a movie where I am sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh man.
This is a movie that I wish I could show people blindly, but it's definitely a movie where I feel like I have to give them a heads up. You know,
you're so much nicer than I am.
I don't know. I have to be like, yo, man. I don't know if there's some shit that bothers you. This happens. This has this stuff in it. So
I feel like most of our friends are freaks, but there are lines within them. We know where the line is.
I think the only thing that I gave my friends a heads up on was the dog. Like, the only thing I was straight up, I was just like, no, the dog dies. Everything else, I was just like, I don't know, man. You're just going to have to watch and find out.
So when people talk to you about Batman films, like, do you have to tell them that Batman straight up just punches, like, some Rottweilers in The Dark Knight?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. No. I'm pretty in, like, and it's going to make me sound like a goddamn animal, but, like, I'm pretty indifferent about animal death in movies.
Yeah, I am too. A lot of people are very very touchy about that, but it's just like, I don't know, death is death to me.
It's also, I'm just like, I feel like it's kind of like, it might be my hot take, but I think it's like people like think it who get very touchy about animal death but will watch the most gruesome or people death. Like, I'm just like, where's the disconnect here?
It's like, wait, there's something wrong with you, you know? Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm raising my hands back here. I'm just raising my hands.
But, no, yeah. Animal death doesn't bother me, unless it's actual animal death, so in such a case as fucking...
Like
a
cannibal holocaust. All your Italian exploitation movies.
Yeah. So unless it's that, then I do have a problem with it. But otherwise, if it's fake, then I don't give a fuck. But no, yeah, I don't care if Batman's punching dogs.
She's like, you know what? More dogs. How about that?
How about more Rottweilers?
Let's have Robert Pattinson punch a dog in the next one. Yeah.
Yeah.
If he doesn't punch a Chihuahua in one frame of that movie, you know, minus 2 stars.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And finally, Avery with 5 stars says, kitty, 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 kitty.
Oh, God, it's worse when you do it for some reason. I don't know.
Because I've been practicing for years.
can you imagine just like, you know, a while back, a lot of us had a little too much to drink at Webster's apartment, and we all kind of claimed a couch, claimed a floor, and stuff like that. Can you imagine, like, just waking up in the middle of the night and just see, like, Webster, like, just saying that shit? I'm putting my boots on, and I'm getting the fuck out of there.
Oh, that's funny as shit. You know,
you're like, wait, why is only one boot fitting? Why is only one boot fitting? What's going on?
Oh, wait, there's something in this boot.
It's like, why is my foot missing?
Oh, shit. The next time I need to, anytime you guys drunkenly fall asleep, that is absolutely how I'm waking you guys up. Just kitty, 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 kitty.
Fuck that.
Oh, God. Worse than any alarm.
Oh, yeah, it's the worst kind of alarm. No, I would never...
No, that's on the new iOS update. The alarm update's definitely going to have that there, just so you know.
No, I would never do that. That would be good, because also I just don't want to get punched in the face. I saw that, Phil.
Nope, you didn't see anything.
All right, moving right along. Audition is a pioneer and is described as an influence on torture porn. One of my own favorite subgenres. Edelstein was the dude who invented the term and describes Audition and other films like Saw, The Devil's Rejects, and Wolf Creek as movies that offer, quote, titillating and shocking scenes that push the audience to margins of depravity in order for them to feel something, unquote. God, I love torture porn.
Yeah, I feel like this is like a masterclass in doing that too, because they have this slow build up, you know, and then all of a sudden it's just like horrific body horror torture, you know, and it's like it's done by someone who's cute and seems like wholesome mostly otherwise, and it's like, oh my God, you know.
This movie, in terms of like categorizing it as whether or not it's like a torture porn movie or not, I think this is a non-American take on torture porn, because we get all of those other movies mentioned, other than Wolf Creek, which is Australian, Saw and Devil's Rejects, like that inversion of torture porn is so like gratuitous and over the top from minute one to like minute 90.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
90, versus this, which I feel like is a little bit classier in a way, if you can even describe it like that, but. Basically, I'm saying we're calling Saw, like, a little overhanded, but I do love Saw.
Well, there's a reason. There's a reason that when people call things torture porn, a lot of times it's you know, it's pejorative. It's not. It's not meant to be a you know, a
compliment.
A compliment on the genre. Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy because, again, like, anytime I ever, like, I see something that's torture porn, I'm just like, it's just a descriptor. Like, it's not, like, good or bad. It just, it is what it is, right?
Yeah. It's like gratuity, essentially.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm gonna shameless self-plug right here, too, since we're in the genre of torture porn. My story, Obscene. I've been doing a series on Scare You to Sleep right now, and it is very much torture porn, very body horror. If anybody's into that type of stuff, go check it out. Shelby's been doing an awesome job of adapting my story, which is...
Oh, cool.
It's been pretty bonkers. It's definitely worth checking out. I don't know if any of you have listened to it yet, but...
I saw some of the short stories that you've been, like putting out written-wise, and those have been really cool. But no, I haven't listened to anything yet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, fun fact... I got very similar feedback about this story that Mike got during walkouts of his screening of Audition, where one woman came up to him and said, "You're a sick man." And apparently,
that's awesome.
the second part of Obscene, Shelby got a bunch of hate mail because people were offended by it and upset by it. And they said that they thought that me and Shelby both had some sort of mental disorder.
Nice.
Well, now we have to listen to it and put it in the description when we share.
Yes, please.
Just direct me where I can find it. I will find it immediately.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obscene on Scary Sleep. Anyways, back to the thing. I just had to bring that up.
No, good.
Especially because I was reading like trivia about this movie, and I was like, oh, that's like the same thing someone said about us.
So, Audition influenced director Eli Roth, another favorite, in making Hostel, and Quentin Tarantino holds Audition in his top 20 films, claiming it as, quote, a true masterpiece if there ever was one, unquote.
It rules.
Good taste, gentlemen.
It's a great movie.
Good taste.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I fucking, like, I love that Eli Roth saw this and was just like, how can I compound this? and then fucking made Hostel.
Yes.
Audition is among... the films included in the book, 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die. It is also included in 101 Scariest Movie Moments on Shudder, which is a fantastic documentary, or like kind of like a Talking Heads documentary. Very much like VHS I Love the 80s type vibe, if that's your...
Yes.
If you dig that shit, which I know you do.
Yeah. Give me my House Sparks freaking out over this movie, and I will watch that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But basically, they break down, like, 101 scariest movie moments. And it's not necessarily whether or not the movie itself is, like, the scariest. It's, like, the scariest moments themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is in there. I won't tell you what scene it is, but it is so good. And it isn't the scene you're thinking of. It has nothing to do with the last 20 minutes of the movie.
I feel like I know, nice. But... I'll give it a watch.
But,
we
have
Shudder. We pay for Shudder.
We
have the option.
The documentaries on Shudder are top fucking notch. I cannot emphasize
They are pretty
this
solid.
Enough.
I like the Cursed Movies one, too.
Yeah, Cursed Films
are
good.
That was a good one.
Woodland Days or Days Bewitched, the folk horror one is incredible. They have like a four-part series on horror in the 80s specifically, and each part is like 3 hours long, or 6 hours long. It is an incredibly long series. Anyway.
Alright.
Enough about my soapbox about Shudder documentaries.
It's your birthday. Whatever soapbox you want, Webster.
God damn
this is your time. This is your time. Alright, I think it's my turn. Yes. Topping it off with the themes of this particular film. So, since the release of this film, Audition has been considered one both feminist and misogynistic. Get your shit together, audience.
Yes.
Anyways, director Takashi Miike has stated that when he met journalists in the UK and France, he found they commented on the film's feminist themes when Asami gets revenge on the men in her life. I mean, I guess that makes sense. So the film sets up Shigeharu with traits and behaviors which could be considered sexist. A list of criteria for his bride to meet, and the phony audition format he uses to search for a future wife. Also, look how he treated his assistant, huh? What a motherfucker. The film provokes us to believe that he has a sexual history with her. They do kind of allude to that, that's true.
It's very also, heavily, yes, yeah.
Does he have sexual fantasies about his son's girlfriend? Like, huh? Is that, it framed that way?
Yeah, that part whole, too, man.
That whole, like, when he's tripping balls and he's just, like, seeing women left and right from the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's only so many women in this movie, except for the fact that there's, you know, he could have picked any of the women from the audition scene. And it's all, like, very inappropriate women for him to be having fantasies about. And I'm just like, this is not good.
Yeah.
One 7 years of loneliness will do that to a man. I don't know.
Well, I don't even know if it's seven years of loneliness because it implies that his freaking assistant like blew him at one point, and I'm just like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's
true. but is that part of like the hallucinations or what? I don't know. That's a confusing part about this movie. It's like how much of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not usually.
I'm kind of leading to believe that this was like we were in his subconscious, like whether or not if it went down or not between him and his secretary, I don't know. But
he's at least thinking it.
Yeah, he's at least thinking it. And the fact that his son's girlfriend that he met, like in the real world, didn't he give him like a thumbs up when he was gonna step outside? He's like, "Hey, good job, son."
He did.
And, like a cute girl or something like that.
Yes, he did. And, like, it was a very cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the hallucinogenic scene, like she pops up in there, mixing it, confirming it, like, "Oh, dude, you really think she's hot? And you're a fucking weirdo."
Yeah. That like he does like the okay hand symbol, and that shit is like so funny. Like that can be like a reaction gif right there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's very memeable that AOK sign that he does. Yeah,
I can see the meme being like the AOK, and then the quick cut to just straight up eye torture. Like that's All right, so
my dad whenever I suggest Sizzler instead of my mom's cooking.
Oh, see, there you get on it, Phil.
I made one up right there.
Well, Tom Mess, author of Agitator, the cinema of Takashi Miike, says that the torture sequence and the mutilation can be seen as revenge, of course, from Asami. And then for my take on that film criticism, anyways, Chris Pizzello.
It's very, very duh.
Writing in The American Cinematographer stated that one plausible approach to interpreting the film is to see the final act as a representation of Aoyama's guilt at his mistreatment of women and his desire to dominate them. Aoyama develops a paranoid fantasy of an attacking object because he harbors sadistic thoughts towards women. He develops a fear that the object will retaliate. Oh, that's a very good observation. Hmm. Okay. Contrary to
I think that's the best take right there.
That's a very good take, actually. Okay, all right, Phil, look at you pulling the quotes. Contrary to this, Miike has stated that the final torture scene in the film are not a paranoid nightmare dreamt up by Aoyama. Asami's trust issues in men is a reflection of the abuse she's received. But doesn't mean that everyone who shares a background like Asami is going to turn out like her. This is still a horror film with a purpose to entertain, but it looks like Miike painted a picture with some very thought-provoking elements. And I mean, yeah, those are the movies that stand the test of time. It could be a little ambiguous, I guess, in your approach to it. This one is and isn't in certain ways. But, you know, with that, we have a lot to discuss here because this is a very, very profound movie, I would say. So what are you guys' thoughts on Audition, huh? And Andrew, you are our guest here, so you get the first dibs. What'd you think of the film?
I think it's great. I love how they do the thing where it's like, the first two acts of the movie are just like a kind of a meet cute, even though it's like kind of sleazy how it like mm-hmm. works, you know, and then all of a sudden it's a guy getting his feet cut off, you know, and being like having needles stuck in him and like horrible torture. You know, I just love how they it kind of comes out of left field, you know.
At least from
a story perspective. Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate that about this film. It's definitely one of my top like horror flicks. Great Japanese horror. Definitely one of my more favorite, like, as far as like foreign horror movies. Japan does them pretty damn good, and this is one of the best that comes out of that crop there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. When did you see this for the first time? Like, how far back does this one go for you?
Probably like 10 or 15 years ago. I saw this one a long time ago, just because it's like I said before, it's always at the top of like the list of fucked up horror movies, you know, like this is really, like the glorious nastiest, you know, and it's always up there with those movies. But it really stands out too, because like, you know, the story's interesting, the characters are like likable, kind of, you know, like as much of a sleaze as the producer buddy is, he's kind of funny. I mean, he's much funnier in the book, but like, yeah, the characters are enjoyable, and yeah, it doesn't feel too contrived either, which like you get sometimes in extreme horror, because like, I mean, really, it's just a setup for the kills, you know. But
that's like an Eli Roth thing for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's just a great film, very well rounded, very rewatchable, and very fun to watch someone who hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is like one of my favorite things about like a horror movie, you know. I may have even told this story on this podcast before, but I remember one time The Lodge, my girlfriend and her dad were watching it in the living room, and I heard the very opening scene of it, and I fucking ran out, and I go, "Are you guys fucking watching The Lodge right now?" And they're like, yeah, we saw it on Hulu. And I'm like, okay, I'm watching this with you guys. And I had so much fun watching them watch that movie.
Brutal.
We covered The Lodge this past, like, winter season because it was cold.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, yeah.
And, God, it's such a good fucking movie. Because I think
it's great. It's so bleak. Yeah.
If you had told that story before, at that point I hadn't seen the movie, but now that I have seen the movie, I completely understand where you're coming from. Where like I absolutely like I would be like, are you watching The Lodge?
Yeah, it's like I dropped what I was in. I was probably playing like Warzone or something, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I know exactly what you're watching just from like the audio I'm hearing right now. Like, make room on the couch. I'm fucking watching this shit with you guys.
Oh man, I haven't shown The Lodge to anyone, but I can imagine watching someone watch The Lodge for the first time. It must be so satisfying.
Oh yeah, well that, and also it's like I know like she doesn't like it when a movie has like an ending like that where it's just like everything's bad and nothing good has happened and there's no real resolution, you know, or no satisfying happy resolution.
There's no happy endings here.
Yeah. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Wait,
what
film.
Do you think? What do you think of Audition? Thoughts on your thoughts on Audition, please.
Oh yeah. This was my first time watching it. So it's you know, right. Yeah, like pointed out like Andrew pointed out, this has always been on a list. Like of just every list I've seen on the internet is of like fucked up shit. Audition pops up like a lot. So it's kind of had
near the top too.
Yes, definitely. So it's had this notoriety for me, and you know my very consistent phobia of needles. And honestly, it's every piece of art that comes up about this movie usually has a needle of some kind. So it has made me pretty apprehensive towards watching it. But with that, now that I finally fucking did it, I thought it was really good. Actually, I thought it was a very good movie. Definitely good. Like late 90s Japanese storytelling, which it has elements of melodrama there, but it's well acted, and the melodrama works in the movie's favor, because it makes the moments of the brief snippets of horror throughout the movie, so you know there's like a foreboding throughout the runtime. Yes, yeah. And then it really amps things up. It just turns it up to 11 at the end. And I like when a movie does that successfully, because there's a lot of movies that attempt to do it that it feels, again, like very contrived. Like, you know, they're just trying to get under your skin. This movie knows what it's holding back and is like, no, no, trust me, like, you're going to get fucked. So enjoy the goofiness, enjoy the weird little asides, and enjoy the absurdness, because once that's gone, like, you're stuck. Like, because you're going to want to see how this turns out, and it's not going to be good. And yeah, I don't know. I thought it was incredibly well made. I can see why it tops so many lists, and I wouldn't say it's fun. It's kind of fun, though. It's kind of fun early on, despite it being like a slower movie. It's fun in its weirdness, which I think is hard for a lot of movies to do. But this wears it on its sleeve. And, yeah, I really thought it was a good movie. Will I watch it again?
I was just going to say, Mickey's very good at, like, having, like, fun weirdness in his movies, too.
Yeah, very I can definitely so. Sense like, that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, super, I don't know, like, weird absurdisms. I don't know. It definitely felt very...
Well, I don't, I don't know if you guys have seen Visitor Q by him, but that's another very fucking absurd, strange horror movie. And I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's a good one. It's very fucking weird. Definitely worth checking out.
All right. We'll add to the list, because, you know, horror just it's an endless well. So yeah. With this one, I think it's a good movie, and I can see why it's so influential. But will I watch it again? It's gonna be some time. It was a rough watch. So, you know, I'm gonna have to give myself some comedies or some like old shit that I used to love in the 90s to bring it back, which is probably what I'm gonna watch after we're done with this episode.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those movies where it's like, okay, I need to give myself a minute after that. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I need to give myself some. I was a little high when I watched it, too. So, ooh, you know.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. That probably didn't help when he was, like, tripping balls.
Yeah, I think I fell asleep from exhaustion and anxiety. Just the energy just dropped. Just dropped. So, but, you know, I'm good now. I'm good. We're here. A little hungover, but I'm fine. Yay.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think? Who's next? Phil? Hey, what'd you think?
All right, man. I love this movie. I first saw this movie, I think I was like 17 or something like that when I saw this in high school. I actually own it on DVD. And this movie rules, honestly. It was one of those times where like Edgelord Phil was like watching fucked up movies at the time. I think this, I watched Audition around like the same time I watched Irreversible. I think I was like a senior in high school, and I was just like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this to myself? revisiting this, I mean, it has been a few years since I've seen it, though. I want to say like more than 5 years, maybe even more since the last time I've seen it. And it's a fucking awesome time revisiting it, and just doing the research on this for this episode was just really cool too, because I didn't know. It's one of those movies where I just didn't have a whole lot of background info on, or like an extended knowledge on. And it's definitely one of those. Yeah, it was just one of those films that I just love every aspect of it, honestly. Yeah, it is kind of a slow burn for a while in the beginning. I think Fwen, you might have mentioned it earlier, like, hey, when are we gonna get to the factory? What is it?
Chocolate? Yeah.
Fireworks factory.
So then I was like, yeah, it does feel like that, even though, revisiting it, I felt that when I was, you know, a teenager watching this, and I felt it now. So it's like, all right, cool. I understand. And when it comes to torture porn, I think this is like the prime example of how like elegant you can make film that's heavily torture porn material. I think elegant is a way to describe it, because if like in the very beginning, if you go in with like no information on this movie whatsoever, you might think this is kind of like a melodrama. You might think like, this is a completely different movie, and then it just turns out to be something else. And it's not as, like, edgy or, like, you know, just grimy as, like, the films that, you know, that this was pretty much the influence for. But this is definitely a way of, a regal, elegant way of producing such a very distorted subgenre, for sure. And, yeah, I love the shit out of this movie, and I'll continue watching this for the rest of my days. That's pretty much what I think about it. Webster!
Yeah, think? So one of the things that keeps popping up as we're discussing it, first of all, love the movie. but I, if I don't get this out, I'm gonna, like, my head's gonna explode. One of the things you guys keep bringing up is how this movie starts as a melodrama and then turns into a horror film. And one of my favorite things to talk about is body genres and, like, how they complement each other. Which we've talked a lot before when we talked about, like, New French Extremity films, which I also love. And it's this theory, or it's, like, theorist Linda Williams termed called body genres, which are movies that are designed to elicit a physical response in the bodies of spectators. And horror and melodrama are two of the three. And I think Audition is such a beautiful example of using two of those genres to kind of give you, like, almost emotional whiplash, because it does have this very strong melodrama beginning, and then it takes such a hard right into horror. Yes. That I think is just so, so satisfying. So there's that. And I just think they complement each other. Like, it just complements each other really well. Because when you get a horror film that has good melodrama in the plot, I think it elevates it to another level for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
But
like, it keeps engaging. Yeah.
In terms of my experience with this movie, I was introduced to it because I took an Asian horror film in college. And it was so good. We'd covered, I literally just pulled up the syllabus because, but we talked about Audition when we were talking about, like, rape revenge narratives, specifically in Asian films. And I think Audition is also, like, a wonderful rape revenge film, because in, like, from the American side of things, rape revenge films also fall under, like, torture porn, but almost like their own, like, sub category. And I think also not a lot of people necessarily look at this as a rape revenge film, just kind of like just a straight up revenge film, because Asami, just, she's getting revenge from her rape on every man she sees.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little different than the narrative we typically see in rape revenge films, where it's like, I'm going after the one guy.
Yeah.
And she got her one guy, and he had and he had no legs. So yeah. So I love this movie. That was the first time I saw the movie, and it's, like, haunted me since. Like, it's like the kitty 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 kitty, like, well, it stuck. Yeah.
Why do you do that so well? Stop it.
Because it, like I said, it's haunted me since October of 2016. So.
Damn.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of this movie. I think to get more on, like, the good for her discussion, listen to Midsommar from last week, where we talk a little bit more about that. So I don't think it really behooves itself to argue whether or not this is, like, is this a feminist film? Is this a misogynist film? I think arguments could be made either way. I think, like, music, film is very subjective. I think it depends on what you get from it. So I'm not going to say you can't read this as a misogynistic film, because I think there are ways you can read it as misogynistic, and I think that there are ways you could read it as very feminist, or very satisfying for people who have had negative life experiences, for sure. But yeah, that was a lot. I have a lot of thoughts on this movie, but
there's different approaches that one can take in interpreting this, for sure. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about this movie.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so that's my thoughts on Audition. I think it definitely isn't for everyone. I think it definitely... know your audience if you're going to subject them to it. Like, I knew my friends weren't going to, like, scream and run away crying if I showed them the movie. But not everyone has that common sense. So maybe give your friends a heads up if you're going to subject them to the movie. But yeah, I think more people need to appreciate Audition because it is incredible.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. It's even for me being apprehensive, like, I think maybe because I've watched so many horror films by this point, I'm like, okay, cool. This is distinct. I'm down with this. Because there's formulaic aspects sometimes too. But no, this one, it's one of the good ones. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not nice. It's not really nice. It's not comforting. But it's
a good movie. Some people find Audition comforting, which, you know, more power to you. But.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Someone just turn on their Xbox?
I hit my controller. That was my bed.
Someone's like, Alex has been talking. She's going to keep talking. I know, right?
That's the ringer. Oh, that's a good one. Oh, that's funny. Okay. Well, I mean, I think we're at the end of the wire here, so.
End of the wire here?
Mm-hmm, we're down the wire. Wow. I'm so. You know what? I got nap time in before we start Boone tonight, so.
You know what? I like that one, Flynn. You know, it's really rare that I'll compliment your pun on the podcast, but that was a good pun.
I don't even try its instincts at this point. So we're down to the wire here.
It sounded effortless.
It did sound effortless, which is why I'm just like, excuse you.
What would you guys rate Audition out of 5 wire saws, huh? Out of 5 of them's?
Honestly, for me, it's like a 4.5. No, you know what? 4.75. Only because, like, I don't know. It's a minor complaint that I have, and it's just the pacing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, just like the first two acts. Because, you're watching these two scumbags, like, putting up together a plan. And it's just like, I don't care about you. I don't relate to you. And you're a piece of shit already. You're showing that early on. And I'm just like, all right. And then, like, you can't even enjoy, like, a group of girls, like, having a good time at a bar. You look at me, just give them disgusting looks. And I'm just like, all right, well. And then, but then I'm like, okay, but something's going to, like, if this was my first time watching it, I would tell myself, like, okay, something's going to happen to these guys, right? And I can't wait. So I guess that's what's going to keep me watching this film. But honestly, it was just like, I don't know, just minor pacing stuff here and there. But I fucking love this movie. I'll watch it anytime. I would like to watch this again because it's been a while. And, I'd say 4.75.
Yeah, that's a good rating. Nice. I'm going to go ahead and say 4, a solid 4. I think it's really, really good. I probably could rate it higher, but I would have to watch it more times, I think, to confirm the rating. But also the act of doing that is very difficult for me. So, yeah. And I don't know. I'm usually okay with gore. I think maybe the needle stuff made it a little difficult. And yeah, Phil, you're right. I mean, the pacing is back and forth. Sometimes the pacing, to me, because it's such a rug pull, totally works, but you still have to go through the experience, which could be a little like, okay, when are we gonna get there? When are we gonna get there? And then we get there, and I'm like, fuck, I don't know if I wanted that. But hey, there's a skill level here that is, you know, that it lets you know that everybody here was at their A peak, at their A game for sure. Solid 4. Yeah, 4.25. You know what? A little higher. Almost a 4.5 for me. Give me a couple more years and a couple more watches, though. We'll see where it's at, but I think it can only go up from here.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Andrew?
I'm going to give it 4.5 severed fingers out of 5.
Hey, there you go.
Nice. I am also going to give it a 4.5.
Yeah. Nice.
4.5
tiny little needles. 4.5 kitties.
There you go.
Hurts my fucking soul.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
This movie rules.
Hell yeah. Agree. Big agree. All right, guys, let's go ahead and call it here. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. That was Audition from 1999. Next week, we are closing out my birthday month with a movie that a contemporary film came out in 2020. I just saw it, I want to say this past like winter, and it is one of the few films that has made me involuntarily scream out loud. So I'm very excited to cover it with you guys.
Okay. I'm like, what are we covering again? I'm all looking at the schedule.
Yeah. it is a Shudder original, and I am very excited to discuss it with everyone. And we'll also have a guest for that as well.
That's a popular Reddit pick, actually. So you know what? I'm down. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, now that I know that Reddit has co-signed my... it can only...
Good old Alex Webster special.
It can only be good things. All right, cool. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. If you like what you heard, please make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. Also, make sure, for my birthday month, I would love and appreciate it if you could give us a 5-star rating on either iTunes or Spotify. It does help other people find the podcast, and it just means the world to us. You know, we've been doing this, you know, for a long time, and we will continue to keep doing it because we just love doing it. So, your love means the world to us. And if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. You can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo. And Andrew Parker, thank you so much for joining us this week. Where can people find you? Plug your shit. Go.
Fritz Bone Lord. That's my Instagram. That's my Twitter, which I don't really use very often. Yeah, I'm on Facebook too as Andrew Parker. That won't be as easy to find. But my Instagram is where everything important is. Awesome. I'm all in on Instagram right now, so people awesome. Keep telling me I should make TikTok, and they're like, oh, that's what the everyone's watching nowadays, but I'm like, oh, God, that's just another one.
That's what you know? We keep hearing, too, and we're old and resistant to change.
Yes, we fear change.
We fear change.
Can confirm.
Awesome. Again, thanks, everyone, for listening, and until next time... Kitty, 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 kitty. Oh. Bye.
Bye. See ya.